Hello, everybody. We are continuing with the Rays and Initiations webinar commentary. This is in the second part of the book. The first part has been done mostly in written form and can be found on Makara, www.makara.us. The last program, maybe unexpectedly to me, turned out to be kind of a big review in which we examined various processes in the six stages of the building of the Antikorana, and especially the stages of intention, visualization, and projection. And I added some details which I discovered when reading Master DK more carefully. And I recommend to everybody a very careful reading. As I say, I've been at this about more than 40 years, working in this book and reading the Antikorana section, and only recently discovered some things I'd overlooked, so I wanted to pass them on to you. Now, we've talked about the words of power for the first ray and the second ray, and DK has emphasized that since humanity has advanced in its spiritual understanding and is moving more into the world of meaning, that it is the meaning of these words of power applied after a number of steps are taken, which are, the meaning is more important than actually the precise pronunciation of the word, which used to be regarded in former times as of supreme importance. So we're working more with the world of meaning, and for rays 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, only the meaning of the word of power will be conveyed, and not the actual word, which in any case cannot be pronounced by us because it has some factors in it which are neither vowels nor consonants and would have to be conveyed in some sort of oral form. But DK seems to say that it's not even that important in the modern time to do it that way. So we've reached the word of power for Ray 3 active intelligence. It's going to be the, we'll get to it, purpose itself, am I, and it's somehow very much carries quite a first ray note, but let's see what DK says about it. We've learned that the third ray achieves when it has the ability to move from here to there. This is page 507. If we can go there, the let's see. I think it's page 507. Somewhere here. Yeah, here it is. He who works upon the third ray must reach the path from here to there. So this is traveling through space. The illusion of time and space comes very much under the kind of perception of the third ray. And so we have the factor, I think, of time and space and extension connected with this third ray. Now, if I can get back to where I was, I think it was page 517, something like that, and we'll get on with the third ray. Okay. The process of intention and visualization have been followed, and again, the four stages of the projection technique have been concluded. Okay, so we always have to deal with four stages, and we have reviewed what they are. And these four stages are found on page 509. Maybe they're worth reviewing. We become focused in the soul ray, that's number one. We realize the point of tension and the finished product of the visualization process, which is probably the sevenfold bridge of light, maybe with the colors of our soul and personality rays standing out the most. A focused activity of the will, this is number three, in which the line of light or living substance is imaginatively and creatively sent out or projected from the mental unit as far as possible towards the spiritual triad. You kind of wonder how we would determine how far is possible, using constantly the creative imagination. I mean, is this a felt activity? Do we realize when it can go no further? And finally, this line of light, the strand or bridge, is then pictured as colored by the two ray qualities and is held stably aligned in the light of the spiritual triad and not the light of the soul. This is the fourth stage of the projection process. Okay, so let's keep these things in mind, and we'll go here to back to page 517, where we were reading the four stages of the projection process on page 509. Okay. So visualization and intention have been gone through, and the four stages of the projection technique concluded. Okay. At the point of highest tension, and, you know, how do we determine that? This, we must feel when that point of highest tension has been reached, the disciple utters the word of power for the third ray. It is not easy for the disciple on this ray to achieve the necessary focal point of silence. Well, you know, the third ray type talks a lot. This is just a simple way of saying much inner and outer talk involved with the third ray. And I think that's a good thing to write down there. TRD or TDR. And we'll call it third ray. Okay. His intense fluidity leads to many words or to great mental activity. Intense fluidity. Interesting that it is ruled by a planet, Saturn, which is not very fluid in many respects, but also perhaps by Mercury, which has a strong third ray component as well as the fourth ray component. And Mercury is a fluid, a planet of fluidity, as we learn when we even look at the metal Mercury, which is a fluid metal, a kind of a liquefied metal. So it's hard for him to achieve the necessary focal point of silence. His intense fluidity leads to many words or to a great mental activity, frequently carried forward under the impulse of glamour. DK had a student who was a third ray soul, and perhaps he was the most glamored of all of the 50 some disciples. I think it's hard for the third ray type to find the point of centralization reached through a necessary stillness, as we learn in the integration formula for the third ray. So all of this activity, all of this movement, this fluidity, this inability perhaps to focus with sufficient intensity, although, you know, third ray concentration involved in philosophy is very strong. But anyway, all of this, it lessens the potency of what he seeks to do. But, and eventually it must be so, when he has succeeded in achieving mental silence and is simply a point of intelligent concentration, and let me say, which the highest third ray types demonstrate, then he can use the word of power with great effectiveness. Okay. The difficulty is that he has to overcome the tendency to use it with the idea of physical plane results in his consciousness. I suppose the ability to work without attachment to results or with no heed to the results which might eventuate is constantly counseled by DK, and I guess the third ray type needs it, especially because it is a ray of manifestation and it wants to see the outworking of the impulse, the energy impulses it sets in motion. So perhaps looking too much for tangible results will prevent the real work from going on. Always he works from the angle of that divine quality which characterizes matter. Just as the second ray, disciple always works from the angle of quality, and the first ray disciple from the positivity of spirit. This is very interesting and important. It gives the tendencies of the three major rays, matter, quality, and spirit, life quality, quality and appearance, by other words. But once he intuitively comprehends, and indeed, even if the intuition is not that keen at first, all ray types eventually are able to access it. Once he intuitively comprehends and factually grasps the concept that spirit and matter are one reality, or spirit matter are one reality, this is the famous Blavatsky quotation, HPB quotation. And once he has achieved within himself the sublimation of matter, we might say rising into cognizance of higher forms of matter, then he can divorce himself from all that the human being understands in relation to form. Though there are higher types of forms which most human beings would not consider form at all. He can then utter the word of power which will make possible his complete identification with spirit via the Antikorana. And the word is, and notice even though it's a phrase, it's called a word because it starts out as a word, but this is how it is translated in the world of meaning. Purpose itself, am I. And here we have a connection of the third aspect of divinity, and that's one of those that I have to put in. I know you will be patient with me. Third aspect of divinity. Okay. Oop, that's spelled incorrectly, and that's why I try not to rush too much. Third aspect of divinity. Replace, yes. And go on. The third aspect of divinity with the first aspect. And that is found also in the fusion formulas. So let's, oh goodness, I don't know what's going on here, but let's just see. Third aspect of divinity, and looks okay to me, so, okay, I'm not getting it, but I'll just spell it out. I'm kind of the persistent type, if you don't mind, and I'm going to do my best here. Third aspect of divinity. Okay, we're going to replace that. I'm going to say this is okay, and this is okay, and yep, there it goes. But of course, how persistent can I be? This is very foolish, isn't it? I know you'll think I'm going on too long here, but I'll do my best. Yes and yes. Okay, it's not going to allow me to do it, so I'm just going to go on. Anyway, what I've been trying to say here is there's a connection here between the third aspect of divinity and the first aspect of divinity, just as in the fusion formulas, where using the proper formula for the third ray gives you a first ray effect of inspiration and of power. Okay. So purpose itself, am I, is the key phrase, and it makes possible his complete identification with spirit, because at last he can abstract himself from matter via the Antikarana. Okay. Isolated unity. This is a fusion factor for the first ray, and presented attributes for the third ray. And when it comes to the second ray, we have inclusive reason. That has a third ray effect. The first ray fusion formula has a second ray effect. The third ray fusion formula links with the spirit, has a first ray effect. So there is some similarity here between what is being achieved by this third ray word of power and the fusion formula for the third ray presented attributes. Okay, so that seems to be all he's going to say about that. We have to disengage. The idea is, we don't want that. Oh, goodness. Okay, let's just see how I'm doing with sad. It's the second aspect of divinity. I have a tendency to want to spell the divinity. I tend to want to spell aspect incorrectly, and that's not going to work. Okay, so if we can, disengage from matter or consider matter in a higher, if we can abstract, you see, it is necessary for the third ray type to abstract, and it is, after all, the ray of abstract mind. So away from the usual perception of matter and into a higher realization of the higher forms of matter. This is what is possible, and eventually identification with spirit. Okay, well, let's just look a little bit there. He hasn't said so much about it as he has the first and the second ray. We have to get away from the idea of manifestation. Leave behind the tendency to want to see concrete manifestation. And we have to work more in terms of quality and in terms of the forms of a higher nature. Okay, but the intuition comes, and we realize the transformation of spirit into matter and matter into spirit, and a kind of sublimation of the idea of what matter is eventuates, and then he can release himself from the lower 18 subplanes. It's one of those words which, one of those areas which sums to a 9, and the 9 is the cyclic form for the third ray. He can release himself from the lower 18 subplanes and the kinds of forms thereon found, and then begin to deal more with etheric forms, which are not form at all, as the lower consciousness considers form. And then comes this identification with the origin of all that we consider the human being at this time. All right. As regards the other and remaining words of power connected with the four rays of attribute, I shall simply list them as there is little I can say about them. Why is that? Let's see. Why is this? Will we have to arrive at their meaning ourselves? Okay. They can be comprehended in the light of what I have said, anent the three words of power used upon the rays of aspect. Well, the rays of attributes, and let's call it, let's look at this, and we'll call them R-O-A-T, and we'll call this rays of attribute, okay? The rays of attribute are derived from the rays of aspect. So let's just see how we put that in, R-O-A, and we'll call this rays of aspect, the first, second, and third. You know, the fourth ray, somehow a combination of the first and second ray, the fifth ray, a combination of the first and third, the sixth ray, a combination of the second and third. Maybe some people will think it, of it a little bit differently. And then seventh ray, equal measure of all the three rays of aspect. Okay, ray four, harmony through conflict, to merge with one. Well, what can we say about this? The one is already there and does not have to be made by the two. So the two are aspects of the pre-existent one. And so that sense of duality gives way to a sense of oneness, which is ever present, but hitherto undetected. Well, we probably can ponder this, but it is certainly the bringing together of multiplicity and fusing it into a oneness from which it derived. The two derive from a pre-existent one. So it's not like two halves make a whole. This is not is not the same as two halves make a whole. Even when duality seems to reign, oneness always prevails in the reality behind the seeming. Okay, the next one, who wrote this here? Alice Bailey, perhaps. Ray 5, three minds unite. This asserts the fact that the universal mind, the higher mind, and the lower concrete mind are blended through the projected antikarana. Let's say universal mind in terms of, okay, let's have one there, in terms of universal mind in terms of the cosmic physical plane, the cosmic physical plane is the type of mind on the atmic plane. Now, from a higher perspective, universal mind would be considered the kind of mind that the Buddha touched in his sixth initiation enlightenment. It would be cosmic mind. Was it the four lower subplanes of the cosmic mental plane, or even something higher? But at least it was the cosmic mental plane. Okay, so that's universal mind. The higher mind, we know, involves the first, second, and third subplanes of the mental plane on our cosmic physical plane. And maybe we would separate out the first level as abstract mind, perhaps. But still, they all are, in a way, higher mind, and the concrete mind, the lower four subplanes. So somehow, this is the connection, it seems to me, is the connection of all seven subplanes of the systemic, S-Y-S-T, why not do that? Oh, S, maybe this is not going to work. S-Y-S-C, we'll do that. Systemic, S-Y-S-C, and S-Y-S will be system. S-Y-S, system. So this is the connection of all seven subplanes of the systemic mental plane with the atmic plane, all of these found on the cosmic physical plane. Now, another way of looking at three minds unite, there is, is another way of looking at three minds unite. And we'll call this three minds unite. And that would be, and this would be the union of the concrete mind, the sun of mind, or higher mind, and the abstract mind. In this case, we do separate out the first subplane of the higher mental plane from the second and third subplane on which we find the egoic lotus, and that would be called normally sun of mind, and then the concrete mind. This is a more proximate way of union, and it has less of a reach to it. Now, of course, we're not really including the transcendental mind here, which is the Buddhic mind, and there's probably ways in which we can unite them. Concrete mind, higher mind, including the first subplane of the higher mental plane, and then the transcendental mind of Buddhi. And universal mind, well, Buddhi begins to realize something about the nature of the solar system, which is sometimes called our universe, our little universe. The word universe isn't, and universal do not always refer to the vast entirety. Sometimes they simply refer to our solar system, so we have to know the context in which they are used. So three minds unite, interestingly, the fifth ray is a ray of some degree of fragmentation. And it must at length unite the three aspects of mind, however we want to consider those, if it is to reach the spirit. Now, the fifth ray soul does resolve into the first ray soul. That'd be a nice way of doing it. First ray soul. And, you know, this resolution requires a tremendous sense of oneness and of unity. So let's just say what the fifth ray has taken apart, it must put back together or fuse. the parts together. So three minds unite, actually, eventually, for the master or higher initiate, the mental field, okay, mental field, that's a good one. Whoop. Okay, MF. We have mental plane, we have mental body, we have mental unit, we have all those. Mental field. So for a master, the or higher initiate, the mental field is not fragmented, but is one seamless whole. And that's the kind of thing we have to learn how to create, so we can take that so-called elevator of consciousness up and down and go from abstract to concrete and into that feeling state of mind that is a unity of mind, the sun of mind. We can visit any one of those at will without this abrupt shifting of gears. You know how it is when you don't know how to drive a car and you don't know how to use the clutch, and you try to shift and there's a big lurch and the whole mechanism may stop. And really, we need a kind of a seamlessness in traveling in the condition of mind. There's also an analogy to the Antikarana and to this seamlessness in vocal training, where we have the different registers of the voice, the chest voice, middle voice, higher voice, falsetto. All of those at first seem like separate compartments of the voice. But when the training occurs, you can move seamlessly from one register to another with very smooth transitions, rather than that lurching sound which points out such a distinct difference in quality that your perception is disturbed. So there are many analogies to the kind of seamlessness which has to be achieved in the mental plane when the three minds unite. Now, here, I guess, you know, leaving us to our own devices here, for the sixth ray, the highest light controls. And this is a little different from I see the greatest light, which is the great light of Shambhala. This seems to have kind of a somewhat of a first ray quality to it. And the sixth ray, you know, which I have said is a blend of the second and third, some people might say it's a blend of the first and second, whereas the fourth ray is the blend of the second and third. I mean, we can debate that. So anyway, what is the highest light? The highest light is the light of the monad. And very interesting, the number six. Okay, NB, was that a good one? Let's try that. Okay, number. The sixth plane is the monadic plane. The number of the monadic plane, is the sixth plane. Okay. So we're looking for the light of the monad, and we're seeking the greatest abstraction. This is the ray of abstract devotion. Well, let's call it the ray of abstract idealism. It is the ray of devotion, the ray of idealism, and the ray of abstract idealism. So there's no higher abstraction that we can achieve as a human being on the cosmic physical plane than to focus within our monad. Well, maybe if we break the monadic vehicle and focus logoically, there is one higher possible state of abstraction, but it's pretty abstract to be focused in your monad, and so we seek the very highest here. The sixth ray is always seeking the very highest, And the monad is the very highest in terms of the three human vehicles. Now, the vehicles are the, you know, the personality, the tabernacle in the wilderness, the soul vehicle, the Temple of Solomon, and then the monadic vehicle, the Temple of Ezekiel. So in terms of vehicles, at least, and all of them must be broken eventually, every temple, no matter how beautiful, has to be destroyed in some way to liberate the essence which is ensconced in this vehicle and uses the vehicle developmentally for a long time, but then finds it to be a prison. So we reach for the highest here. We reach for the highest, and we seek monadic control. Reach for the highest and seek monadic control. Okay. MDC, MDCR. That'd be a good one, wouldn't it? Oh, there it is, monadic ray. Perfectly. Perfect. So the highest light controls, it's not the same as I see the highest light and them somehow informed and illumined and filled with understanding. This is more about commanding the lower lives to align with the will of the monad. You know, Master Jesus, who is in some respects a sixth ray monad, a sixth ray Chohan, is said to be a great general. This is very different from the sweet and suffering Jesus that is found in so many of the sort of childish illustrations of the some of the previous centuries. So there is a great commanding quality here when the sixth ray and the center of will unite. A great commanding quality results when the sixth ray and the center of power, the monad, unite. And I'm going to make SXR. And that's going to be the sixth ray. Okay. Probably if I really look at the whole thing, it will not have taken me more than a few hours to rethink what these abbreviations mean and which ones should be included. Okay. Now we go to ray seven. It's called ceremonial law or order, ceremonial magic. The word law here is included. It's usually ceremonial magic or the ray of order and ceremonial magic, but ceremonial law is very interesting. It's quite a term that seems to give law a certain regal, a structured quality. And it is not haphazard law. This is law made by the by divinity, with its great sense of cyclic order and the ceremony, I'm going to call it this, and the ceremony, oh, how about spelling, of the cycles, ceremony of the cycles. And it's a wonderful statement which gives the goal of the Aquarian Age when the seventh ray will be so prominent, and it is the highest and the lowest meet. Where do they meet? Maybe on the altar of the Buddhic plane, or perhaps they meet on the very lowest plane and on the very highest plane, as spirit resolves itself into matter and matter resolves itself into spirit. So the meeting places can be several or a few. The middle or Buddhic plane, the highest plane with the sublimation of the lowest into the highest, and the lowest plane with the condensation, precipitation of the highest into the lowest. But let's put it like this: when this is achieved, heaven has come to earth, and earth can be a heaven. You know, so heaven has come to earth, and earth has risen into heaven. And the idea of heaven and earth here pretty well relate to the different planes, the low planes and the high planes. We're not talking about those post-mortem experiences of heaven and hell. We're talking about higher and lower vibratory levels. The highest and the lowest meet. And let's just say this can be the logoic LGC. How about that? What will that be? LGC, we'll call that logoic. The logoic archetype must be brought into the world of becoming. Okay, that's the world of being, world of becoming. So let's put them in a world of being, and the world of becoming. You know, the first two planes being the world of being, and the next five the world of becoming. WBC, and this is a world of becoming. Okay, so the archetype is brought down into the world of becoming, and there organizes all relations according to the archetypal relations in heaven. Okay, so A-R-C-H-L, and this is archetypal. And relations. Let's see, what do we got there for relations? RLS, relations. Okay. So, archetypal and relations. There are archetypal relations in the world of purpose, and the whole goal of evolution is to make sure that those archetypal relations can descend onto the lower planes and there structure the more chaotic relationships of the world of becoming. So now we've looked at all of them. We've got to bring heaven to earth. We've got to be controlled by the great light of the monad. We have to put together the fragmented mind and make it a seamless vehicle. We have to take all dualities and restore them to the oneness from which they came to merge with one. We have to carry out purpose itself, am I, carry out purpose in all the plans we make. I'm going to say that. We must carry out purpose, divine purpose, DPR, in all the plans we make on behalf of the divine plan. We have to see and understand the greatest light in all things. I see the greatest light, and we have to see that light shining through all forms, and not only shining through all forms, but being the very substance of those forms. And we have to assert the facts. And DK has given us seven facts, which we assert. Okay, I wonder how I could do this. Okay, let's see. The fact of the triad? Uh-huh, here it is. Well, maybe it is. Then the work is done. Maybe we, what are the facts we assert? The spiritual triad is a fact. The relationship between the blended soul personality is a fact. The Antikorana is also a fact. You know, it stabilizes these facts within our consciousness, and they are no longer so fluid and so easily dissipated and forgotten. The personality of form and monad of spirit, both are facts, and their relationship is a fact. The will of the monad is the factor to be evoked. The monad can, the fact that the monad can and will contact its instrument upon the physical plane. This is done by the evocation and the descending part of the Antikorana, which meets the ascending part of the Antikorana, and the work is done. So I assert the fact, I see the greatest light, purpose itself am I to merge with one, three minds unite, the highest light controls, and finally, how does it, heaven and earth meet? the highest and the lowest meet. Okay. So you will note that in all these words of power, two obvious thoughts emerge. First, the goal of all activity is the complete fusion of the three aspects. And secondly, that consciousness of this comes through the building and use of the bridge between the spiritual triad and the personality. The complete fusion of the three aspects, spirit, soul, and matter or personality, body. And secondly, that we have the consciousness of this fusion via that bridge of light or bridge of consciousness we call the Antikorana. Our problem is that areas of our perception are practically separated from each other. And all of these areas, all of these areas have to be seen simultaneously. You will note that these are all definite assertions. So remember, we're we are in the curriculum of the will, based on knowledge and leading to conviction and inner certainty. I would say that about the word conviction. We may start using a phrase like, I see the greatest light, and it's just words at first and expresses kind of a vague aspirational hope, but eventually it becomes true, you know, the light of the monad will appear. And, you know, it's not the greatest light, but for us as a human being, it is the greatest light. The various schools of affirmation found today throughout the world are but the distorted efforts of humanity to arrive at the affirmative position which the blended soul personality always necessarily assumes. The affirmative position, I suppose we feel we can definitely, successfully and without failure accomplish something when we are recognize ourselves as the blended soul personality, and demonstrate a kind of instinctual reaction to a new realization which is coming into the consciousness of humanity via its disciples and initiates. The consciousness of the higher human beings does begin to affect the consciousness of those for whom these factors are not real and not even objects, yet objects of aspiration. So we want to arrive, we want to become the soul infused personality, and that gives us a kind of a affirmative position, a positive position. Remember that positivity is the goal for the initiate on the second ray, the ray of consciousness. And a new realization is coming. Remember, realization comes from the fifth level of the atmic plane. It's a high thing. A new realization is coming into the consciousness of humanity. And we are rising, at least towards an instinctual reaction to that new realization. We feel something there, and it will become clearer and clearer in our understanding as we practice and move with the suggestions which are given here. We have practically concluded our study of the Antikoronic. Oh, goodness, you know, you begin to realize how much is left to us. So much is left to us and to our realization through practice. However, I want to enlarge a little bit further upon the three final stages of the building process as dealt with in the and outlined earlier. These three stages were most briefly considered owing to their abstract nature. They are part, however, of the six building methods, even though we have to wait expectantly for the evocation. The first three were considered in greater detail than the last three, of course, because they're somewhat under our control as a soul-infused personality or personality in process of being soul-infused. The first three were considered in greater detail than the last three, and I have felt it might serve a useful purpose if I gave more teaching anent invocation and evocation in particular, for it will condition consciously and exoterically the New World religion as it has conditioned it esoterically and unconsciously. In other words, he is preparing us for the practice of the New World religion. DK is preparing us for the practice of the New World religion. And that's one we're going to want to put in, don't you think? New World religion. Well, we're almost getting there. Just a few more minutes left. Let's see what we have. So he's continuing on invocation and evocation. I don't think I'm going to get into this until our next program. I think it would be wise that way. And then let's just see what is coming up afterwards. Oh, it's a rather lengthy section, isn't it? And does he deal with stabilization here? And does he deal with resurrection? This is a lengthy statement. So I think the idea is wise not to begin this until we can work it out together. The diagrams don't transfer so well, so I'll have to go to the original page for them. And we're getting some history of the planet here. I think it's very interesting. All right. No, it is long. It is long. So we're going to go back to the end of number. It is very long. Okay. So we'll consider this to be, this is the end of Rays and Initiations webinar commentary, number 48. And page is what? Up to 519. And let's see where we have begun. I think we covered actually quite a bit. So this is 517 to 519. Let's see, is that correct? Let's see. Yep, it is. Well, actually, it seemed that we were covering more than perhaps we covered. Okay, so Words of Power for the Third Ray, pages 517 to 519, and this all is taking place today. And today is the 26th of January, 2017. Okay, these are the various words of power which we must brood upon and find the one that is correct for us. So many are going to be dealing with, I see the greatest light, you know, but not exclusively. And this is 519, and our date again is the 26th of January, 17, and beginning of Raise and Initiation Webinar Commentary number 49 from 519 on. You know, who really wants to get into these matters? Even those people who consider meditation to be foundational in their life don't necessarily want to get into this kind of technical work where so much occultly has to be held in mind simultaneously until it becomes routine for us, until it forms the basis of a almost an art of accessing higher worlds. It's based upon a science, but when you routine the knowledge that is found in science, you begin to be able to handle it as an artist would. An artist of the spirit, a spiritual artist, you know, someone who has made an art of his or her approach to the higher worlds because this person has incorporated the steps so successfully and so seamlessly that they can be wielded without hesitation, delay, difficult transitions, and so forth. It all becomes a flow. So the person who really can do this will maybe wonder, you know, why are you going through all of these stages when I just do it? You know, I just focus and there I am in the higher worlds, and here you are building all of these scientific steps and working laboriously to incorporate them in your sort of response apparatus. Well, you know, we have to begin where we are, and the people for whom this is an absolutely automatic process have at some time or another, I think, made their slower type of approach. Okay, almost 1 hour of work now, so I think we can, you know, I always have that tendency to want to go back. Maybe it's the my rising sign Cancer, you know, always wanting to go back over things to make sure that everything has been extracted. But it's impossible. Everything cannot be extracted because it's going to be up to you how you read this material, how you respond to maybe what I have suggested or don't respond to it. It's your own take on things which will count. And even though I could try to be utterly laborious and extract every last thought from these paragraphs, I would never succeed, nor would it necessarily be the kind of perception which you will have when you read the same word. Okay. All right, friends, then that's going to be it for the moment, and we'll get on to number 49 relatively shortly, and hopefully all of us will simply take some time during the day to review the methods until they become quite fluid and routined, and we know what we're doing, and we can do it more successfully with a creative imagination, which really seems to touch something and cause inner energetic amalgamations or fusions. So on to number 49 when we have the occasion to do so. See you later, and all the best. Bye-bye.